Good afternoon, good morning, good evening. I wish we had Brian Blessed here to do the message, but we don't because we're not O2. It's all about Windows Phone. I'm Ewan Spence. That over there is...
Rafe Blanford.
And we only have 48 minutes to save the Windows Phone world.
48 minutes, isn't it? 42 minutes.
Flash, I love you, but we only have 40 hours to save the Earth. No, it's 48. We tried to do it in 30, remember?
Oh, okay, fine. 48 minutes it is then.
48 minutes. There we go. Dino De Laurentiis references out the way. Let's move on to Microsoft's mobile OS, all the hardware partners, and the world of Windows Phone in the last week or so. And it has been a busy one. We talked last podcast about the momentum building up and feeling that things are starting to happen. And they kind of have, Rafe, because let's start with the big news. Windows Phone 7.8 is on the rollout. Not everybody has got it straight away. There's a reason for that. But it's a good thing that we have 7.8, and it will keep all those existing devices and things like the Lumia 800 and the pay-as-you-go devices that are now coming on price, will keep them relevant throughout 2013, won't it?
It will. I mean, the news basically is that the global rollout has started. Not everyone will get this straight away. That's basically because the rollout is phased. I mean, as you can imagine, Microsoft doesn't really want everyone hitting the download servers at the same time. There's also operator approvals. So, you know, some will come out later than others. I had a quick chat with Nokia about this, and they said they expect all of their devices to get 7.8 by the end of February. And I think that will apply broadly to other devices as well. There is some talk of some devices maybe not getting the 7.8 update. The HT7 from HTC was one of those. But I think any device that's come out in the last 18 months, you know, you can expect to get 7.8 on it by the end of February. As always, I'm sure there will be some exceptions. But yeah, this is really good news. I mean, there was a whole, you know, kerfuffle around Windows Phone 7.5 devices not being upgradable to 8. You know, there's all sorts of reasons about that. Technically, it may have been possible, but, you know, they wouldn't have had some of the hardware for many of the features that are sort of specific to Windows Phone 8. And actually, what you do get in 7.8 is the start screen update. And for me, at least, that's the most significant addition in Windows Phone 8. Now, there are some other things I'd have liked to have seen, like fast resume, but obviously they happen lower down in the software. And actually, you know, Windows Phone 7 and Windows Phone 8 run on very different sort of back ends, or if you like, bottom of the software. As we know, it's switched over to the sort of common Windows kernel from Windows CE. And actually, it's remarkable in some ways that that, you know, changeover happened as smoothly as it did going from 7 to 8. But it did mean that, you know, porting across the hardware or bringing up the Windows Phone 7 hardware on Windows Phone 8 would have effectively meant reintegrating the device all over again, device drivers and all of that kind of thing. So it would have been expensive to do, and there would have been quite interesting issues about whether you could have upgraded and kept data intact. So with 7.8, it's obviously still running on the old CE kernel, but it gets this Windows Phone 8-like start screen with the different size live tiles. Ewan, I know you've sort of looked at the news. I actually think that makes it feel like a Windows Phone 8 device, or at least it will do to many people. I'm sure everyone listening to this will know it's not, but for, you know, the average person, it's going to feel like, you know, quite a big refresh.
And that's an important thing. It does keep the device feeling fresh, and because you can't back up. You know, if you go to 7.8 and you go, you know what, I like 7.5. Tough. This is a one-way street. So get used to it. I think the important thing here is that I did an article about this, is that if you were to move up to Windows Phone 8 on these handsets, the obvious thing is the new handsets are dual core, the Windows Phone 7 handsets are single core. There would be a performance hit. It would look rubbish. So you have to find a halfway house. Now, the halfway house is 7.8, and it means that the UI is consistent, as you can see from the start screen, as you can see in the applications. You'll find that when you go in, the panorama top title has been moved down 4 or 5 pixels, and that's universal across the board over Windows Phone 8. So there are some subtle changes to UI. Now, what this means also is that developers will be addressing a common UI platform. Not necessarily a common platform, because of the way you still need to have separate installation packages for an application. So you can have one for Windows Phone 7, or you can have an installation package that runs on both, but it's a bit more bloated than code, or one for just Windows Phone 8, or both of them with the same app ID in the OS works out. But keeping that consistency means that developers should be able to switch between devices quite easily while they're coding. You know, you code for Windows Phone 7 and then you move up to Windows Phone 8, unless you're doing things like an application or direct screen access where you need to see C++ access and you know you're going Windows Phone 8 only, such as the Judge Dredd game, if I recall correctly. Yeah. It is a good halfway house. There will be a lot of people that are going, oh, I've been abandoned by Microsoft because I've not got Windows Phone 8. I've been betrayed. I've been taken up the Swanee and left without a paddle. Michael, what am I going to do? It's terrible. It's you had a phone for a year and a half and it worked and it still works and it makes calls and everything and you don't have cutting edge. But there is still a sort of tacit agreement nowadays in smartphones that you buy a phone and it is kept up to date for a certain amount of time. Windows Phone 7.8 keeps that deal in place, I think, to a certain amount. They're saying, look, it is an older hardware footprint. We have moved on. We've done this for you. It's a good compromise. I think it shows poor communication from Microsoft overall in the last year. And I think that's a slightly bigger issue. Perhaps, you know, separating out what the UI is called and what the actual underlying OS is called might have been a better way. They said, you're not getting the new OS, but you're getting the new UI layer. I think there are a number of different approaches that could have been taken in that sense. But if you pick up this update, you're going to have a phone that looks even better. You're going to have a phone that works pretty much the same way. You are going, I'm going to say the live tiles taking up the whole screen, even though I kind of miss the gutter, does make for a better experience. The tiles, you know, the tiles that are big and don't do anything, you shrink down again. The tiles that do a lot, you can, you know, bigger again. And I do find myself on Windows Phone 8, and kind of expect this to happen on 7.8, using the app list less. You know, I'm putting more apps onto my live tile screen, smaller little launch tiles. You know, if I'm putting 2-3 of the top games that I'm playing on, and then if I want another game, I tend to delete the first one of the games off the live tiles and then bring another live tile in rather than go into the Xbox launcher. It does slightly change how you use the phone. It puts more focus on the live tile area. It puts more focus on interaction with data rather than applications as well. And that's one of the keystones of Windows Phone that I think everybody misses. It's not about the application. It's about the data, and 7.8 continues that process. 8 continues that process even more. But the goal, of course, is that you've got an 800, you move it up to 7.8, you are quite like that. You go into the shops for your upgrade in 6 or 7 months' time, and you go, oh, that's the same as what I've got now, except it's got a nicer camera, and it's purple. And I'll buy purple, I'd like orange, I'll be thinking of orange, but I like purple.
Yeah,
so it's the same as what I've got. So it's actually a very good migration strategy to show people what they'll be getting when they upgrade. When it comes to the upgrade, you know, this is actually, you know, we're going to digress here because it's not even in our show notes or rehearsals. But there is a key moment coming up in the Windows Phone story, which is when people hit that 2-year mark, that it's 18 months to use when they're allowed the upgrades. When the 2-year contracts say, right, well, we'll give you another device now if you sign up for another 2 years. What do you want? This is when we will see how good Windows Phone actually is. It can attract a certain number of users. Can it retain them? Because if it can retain a significant percentage of them while getting in a percentage of new users, we're going to see that install base climb. If people are coming in and after 2 years and going, nah, you know what? I'm going to go for Samsung Galaxy 3Z4 Mini or whatever they're called nowadays. They all look the same. That's when Windows Phone was realizing it will have a problem.
Yeah, that's right. And of course, we're already past the 2-year anniversary for the launch of Windows Phone. But I think you're right. The critical one will probably be with the 7.5, which is when Nokia came in and when sort of the devices, you know, the shipment numbers increased. Obviously, it's still really about getting new users, given the number of devices. You know, to date, it's, I guess, about 15 million. It's probably more than that now, Windows Phone devices. But you're right, of course, you know, if you retain that kind of 15 million and then go on from there, it becomes very interesting. I mean, I think the only problem with 7.8 is it's come out a little later than I think it should have done. It would have been good if it could have been, you know, in the last part of 2012 rather than, you know, February 2013. But on the plus side, you know, it does seem to be a reasonably smooth update. Zoom, for all its faults, it does deliver most of the time. You don't get many failed updates. And thinking back to some of my other smartphone upgrade experiences, you know, it was relatively smooth. Probably just worth mentioning a few other things you get with 7.8. You get.
Do you get a pony? Do you get a pony? I want a pony. Do you get a pony?
No, I'm afraid you don't get a pony. But what you do get is a choice of more colours on. So there's more accent colours available. That's the background colour of the live tiles, and you know, used in the apps as well. Including, I think there's a purple one and an orange one. There was already an orange one before, wasn't there?
And there was already a purple one.
Okay, well, there's more variation anyway.
There's a steel grey and a fuchsia pink. Do I look like the sort of man who would go for fuchsia pink on their phone?
Well, yes, actually.
Yeah.
But anyway,
yeah.
Moving on. We've also got an update on the lock screen experience. It basically provides better protection against an accidental wipe. One of the things I like, it's now got the Bing image of the day. You can have that as your kind of lock screen wallpaper. It's something I use on my Windows Phone 8 device, despite there being a whole bunch of applications to update as well. So I was glad to see that come in, a nice little extra. It's expanding the number of markets that are supported in Xbox in the marketplace. Always good to see that, you know, increasing the size of the addressable market, some improvements in Chinese font and Arabic language handling, and various quality improvements. I can't say I've noticed a big performance boost or anything like that, but it's, you know, I assume there's a couple of bugs that have been fixed. Actually, incidentally, 7.8 does also add support for devices that don't have a camera capture button. I think there's only one of those out there at the moment, is it the One Touch device, I think it is. I'll have to go back and check my notes on that one. But I think that's kind of a shame, because I think having a camera capture button is a good thing. But I guess with the trend towards minimalism in design, anything you can take off, it's probably a request. The other thing you do get with 7.8, because of some of the underlying sort of APIs and bits are updated, Nokia's actually been able to create a few extra applications, and there's things like Bluetooth share and updates to contact transfer and contact share, and that's being able to share media and contacts over Bluetooth, which is one of those bits of missing functionality we've talked a little bit about in the past. Nokia have also said in the past, we haven't actually seen this come out yet, that you're going to get some of the camera lenses like you have on Windows Phone 8, specifically CinemaGraph and SmartShoot. We'll keep an eye on that one. But good to see Nokia kind of providing some extra functionality, filling in some more gaps. I don't think any other manufacturer is going to do that. It sort of underlines Nokia's position as sort of being looking after its users properly. So that's good to see. We're going to have more report on this and more discussion later on. But I guess the good news is 7.8 has arrived, and it does bring the, you know, the primary thing of 8, which is that start screen experience. And as Ewan said, it's been just the same for me. I found myself using the start screen more. Particularly what I found is useful is having the small tile size just as application shortcuts, and you can now get 4 of them in the place of one previous tile. And, you know, that basically means you don't have to switch across to the app screen so much. I haven't used the large tile size quite so much. I tend to have quite a busy start screen. And I thought at first it would mean I'd sort of be scrolling less on the start screen, because I actually have more on the start screen. I probably do scroll about the same amount, but I certainly have a lot more live tiles because I'm using the small size quite extensively. So I'd definitely recommend anyone with a 7.5 device install this update. It's definitely worthwhile. There's no performance issues or anything like that to worry about. You know, it really is a benefit rather than a takeaway, as you sometimes get with these sort of updates.
Rafe's opinion on why there is no performance update is Rafe's opinion entirely and does not necessarily reflect the views of the rest of the All About Windows Phone team, because we've not done any sort of testing or anything with a stopwatch on that.
No,
any complaints can be addressed to he who must be obeyed because he signs the paycheck at allaboutwindowsphone.com.
Thank you, Ewan.
Indeed. Yes. Yeah. Right. Cardav Caldav. Can you do that in 30 seconds, Rafe?
Yes, very quickly. This is
Hold on. Wait a minute. And go.
This is about the Google Exchange ActiveSync story, and Google said they were withdrawing support for Exchange ActiveSync for their Gmail calendar contact services. The deadline was January the 31st. Google have now announced it's July the 31st after talking with Microsoft. Microsoft have also announced that Cardav and Caldav will come to Windows Phone before that date, so there'll be no interruption for users of Google services on Windows Phone.
Okay, what's your over-under?
Ooh, over by 3 seconds.
Under by 4.5.
Oh, brilliant.
We're on the running on the podcast, at least on one item. Right then, okay. Nokia Music Plus. This is an interesting one. Nokia, of course, again, talking about additional services, trying to make their devices stand out more and sort of create a sort of soft lock-in into the Lumia part of the Windows Phone thing. I know that when Steve had a look at the Samsung Omnia handsets, the ATIV handsets, he missed having like things like Nokia Maps going on. So Nokia Music Plus is, well, it's more than Nokia Music, which is you can basically streaming radio service and you can download a mix of stuff that plays as if it was a radio station. And then you have the sort of premium services like Xbox Music Pass, where you can download whatever you like, assuming Windows Phone 8 doesn't corrupt the SD card. And this Nokia Music Plus sits in the middle. Same with pricing. It's about $4 a month, and it should pop up around about February, March. You can have infinite numbers of skipping because Nokia Music uses a radio license for online, certainly in the US. You're only allowed to skip 6 times, and you're only allowed to have an artist appear twice in the hour, and you can only have up max with 3 tracks from an album appearing up every 2 hours or something. There's a bundle of restrictions in there. And some of these are lifted now because you're paying the premium, which of course means that they can bump up the license that they play to people like Sound Exchange and the Harry Fox Agency in the US, and PRS here in the UK and around the world. This is an interesting one because it is actually quite targeted. For me, this service is pretty much useless because when I go to listen to my genres and I go for stuff that's plays obscure stuff from Latvia that's appeared on the Borat soundtrack that are also singing at Eurovision, there's actually a rich vein of music in that genre. You know, you can listen to for hours.
If you say so.
There is, yeah. But Nokia Music Plus doesn't have that. They'll just go, oh, but dunno. Should we play you some Duran Duran instead? Which, individually, I don't have a problem with. It's when they follow up with Spandau Ballet that I go, rubbish band, and throw the headphones away. But for the more mainstream user, for the people who are going for the popular hit parade, Rafe, I suppose that means you because you're the younger one on the podcast, so you have to pretend to be the younger, hip and with it music person.
Oh, yes, definitely.
This is actually pretty good. It's, you know, Spotify's a tenner, Xbox Music Pass is £9 for UK pricings. This is £3.50, I think they're going to come bring this one in. So there's still a little bit of guidance and a little bit of randomness, but it's... I like that Nokia playing with this. I personally can't see a use case for me, and I find it hard to review it. I can review it from a technical point of view, and it's wonderful. But from a term of sort of music appreciation view, it's okay.
Yeah, no, I think it's an interesting one. I mean, there are a few other benefits you get with this, one of which I think specifically...
Do you get a pony?
No, you still don't get a pony. I don't know what it is with you and ponies this week. But anyway, you get an unlimited download of mixes. So at the moment, you're limited to just 4 mixes that you can download. This way, you can have as much as you like. And particularly on the devices with SD cards, you know, potentially that means an awful lot of music. There's also higher quality music. So Nokia is saying it's going to be 8 times the quality. I'm not quite sure what that's going to mean in bit rates. I suspect it's probably around the 512 mark. And you'll be able to sort of dictate whether you download the high or the standard quality music, whether you're on a Wi-Fi connection, that sort of thing. So, you know, some smartness on the back end there, which is good. You also get lyrics, so you can have them either karaoke style or on a static list. I guess that's a nice extra. But one that kind of caught my attention was you also get a desktop stroker, or rather a web app. It's going to be powered by HTML5. That gives you the option to listen to your new Nokia Music Plus subscription on other devices. Now, that could be a PC, laptop, tablet, but also other internet-connected devices like smart TVs and all that sort of thing. So, you know, if you're not got your phone with you or you want to listen to it on something else, it's a nice extra. I mean, I suspect most people would still use their phone because it's, you know, the thing they always have with them, and you plug in your headphones, etc., etc. But it's a sensible addition. As Ewan was saying, I think this is targeted at people who want a bit more than they get from Nokia Music, but don't want the full kind of a la carte music service where you can specify the track. And I actually think there's a lot of people out there like that, and I'd probably classify myself as one of them. I haven't really got the time or the patience to choose tracks individually and make up my own playlist, but I'm quite willing to listen to someone who's sort of done that for me, and that's what Music Mix does. And of course, you can create your own by, you know, specifying 3 artists or some tracks. That's, you know, one of the nice things about Nokia Music. So the benefits, I can see myself, yeah, I'll pay the 3 or 4 quid a month that this is going to require. I mean, the interesting thing, it does make me wonder, is Nokia then at some point going to offer something for the kind of top tier music subscriber, you know, in this £10 a month? Because it does strike me that we're kind of getting 3 categories. There's the kind of the free option, which is generally advertising supported, the fact that Nokia Music isn't ad supported, you know, I think actually makes it really strong in that category. Then we've got this next one up, which is kind of the premium version of streaming, where you get rid of annoying limitations or ads or whatever it happens to be. And, you know, Pandora One is like that, and similar pricing to Nokia Music Plus. And then you have got the Spotify's of this world, and there's, you know, plenty of other ones like that as well, that gives you that full option. And it does strike me that there are these three categories when listening to music, but I also find it really interesting that this idea of subscription music services has really taken off. I mean, Nokia tried early on with something called Comes With Music, which was basically, you know, pay for your music subscription with your phone and then get unlimited downloads. It was DRM protected, and there were various reasons it didn't work out, but it does feel, you know, particularly with the rise of Spotify and other services, that this the age of subscription music services has really arrived. And of course, you've got, you know, the Xbox Music Pass on Windows Phone, which I would assume is going to be Ewan's preferred option, because you do get that same breakdown, you know, that a la carte option on the tracks. But at, you know, £8 a month, it is more expensive. And so having the choice is a good thing. And I think it's particularly smart from the Nokia point of view. You know, it's effectively giving another reason for people to choose Windows Phone from Nokia as opposed to someone else. And it's not just within the Windows Phone world, but it's also compared to an Android device. And I don't think you can underestimate the fact that, you know, Nokia Music comes out of the box. There's kind of no entering of registration information, you know, no login required. It all just works. Now, how is Nokia Music Plus going to work? Well, you will have to have a Nokia account, because there does have to be some payment involved. It can be done by credit card or operator billing. But what effectively it's going to be, there's going to be a new version of Nokia Music released in the next few weeks. And for those markets where it's supporting, you should say, I think it's about 24 of them, and that will expand over time. Effectively, you'll buy a subscription and it will unlock some extra features in the app. I was also talking to Nokia about this, and they were saying they're going to sort of quietly prompt people to, you know, to get the subscription. So, for example, when they try and do their seventh skip in an hour, a message will pop up saying, you can't skip again, but would you like to buy the subscription? And then you'll be able to get it. And similarly, obviously, for downloading music mixes. So I think it's going to be quite a clever step up. And actually, they'll have an advantage, because they'll have this inbuilt free, you know, it's a freemium model, as, you know, Spotify has used. So it'll be interesting to see how well they do with this. You know, Nokia hasn't released any numbers on Nokia Music on Windows Phone yet, but I suspect it could be a quiet success for them. And, you know, on its own, no, it's not enough to, you know, why you'd buy a Nokia phone over something else. Combine it with some of the, you know, the map suite of application, you know, Drive and all of those others, even though that's now available more generally on Windows Phone. There's also things like City Lens, you know, public transport, and, you know, the third party exclusive that Nokia's been bringing to the table, and the better support. You sort of go, actually, those add up to, you know, a pretty strong reason to choose a Nokia smartphone. Certainly in the Windows Phone world, I would be, I love the design of the HTC devices, but for most people, I'd say have a look at the Nokias first because of this extra software. But more broadly in the smartphone world, I think it also is very attractive to users who, you know, aren't necessarily really into smartphones, aren't necessarily early tech adopters, who are, you know, they're buying a smartphone anyway, and they know when they get it out of the box, they'll already have this music experience, the imaging experience from the camera, the maps experience, and all that location stuff. And it adds up to something that, you know, it feels a bit more complete out of the box. And Nokia Music Plus is just, you know, the latest in this, you know, this trend. But yeah, I think it's a really intriguing one. I certainly look forward to getting my hands on it and trying it out, Ewan.
Now, can I be cynical for a moment?
You can, yes. I always like it when you're cynical.
Here we go. It's great big evil black hat conspiracy. Nokia Music Plus is going to be the preferred way of paying for music by the major musical labels. And they will be very, very happy that Nokia are taking this approach rather than a premium a la carte option of subscription. Let me tell you why.
I think it's entirely reasonable that they think that. I mean, because if you look at the studies, the average amount that people spend on music, we're not that far away from the level at £4 a month, are we?
I'm not even talking about the money, younger family member. I'm talking about marketing. I'm talking about advertising. I'm talking about the ability to choose who is number one and who isn't. Now, if you don't have...
Tinfoil hat time, yes.
If you don't have the marketing muscle of the major labels behind you, even if you're released on a major label, it's very, very difficult to get to number one. Let me take an example from May of 2012. A song that sold over 200,000 copies in the United Kingdom, that went into the top 10 of 38 countries around the world, that was number one in 18 of them, but received no promotion in the United Kingdom, did not make the Radio 1 playlist, wasn't put out on the front displays at HMV, wasn't put in the posters of the windows of all the record shops around the country, didn't appear in any of the chat shows or anything to promote the sale of the record coming up, yet still made number three in the charts, still sold 200,000 copies, but received no backing for the music industry.
Right.
Okay?
Yep.
Okay. Now, to be fair, it was the winning song from the Eurovision Song Contest this year. Yeah! But here's the point. If that song hadn't been at Eurovision and had been released by, say, Jessie J, okay, she's a popular singer, Rafe.
Right, okay, thank you. I'm just wondering.
Right. It would have got all that promotion. It would have got on the Jonathan Ross show. It would have been given the gatefold fronts in the HMV at the end of every sort of shelving unit. It would have had all the promotion and the excess plays on the radio, because the record companies would have paid for that marketing, and because they said, we want this to be a hit. And it would have been number one. And it probably would have been number one in the UK for about 5 weeks, simply because the record companies decided that's the one. Not that one. There is an imbalance in the records, in the record publishing label, especially when you look at the major labels. Now, Rafe, what's happened in the last 2 weeks in the British high streets?
HMV have gone out of business.
HMV, yeah, let's look over America. Look at any of the major industrial countries and you'll find that record buying has shifted to going online, to going onto services. The sort of power that the major record labels have to advertise certain artists is actually diminishing. There's much less storefront available for them. You have a little bit of a banner on iTunes. You have maybe one of the three slots in the music store in your Windows Phone handset to promote an album. Those are very much sought after commercial spaces. But being able to have Nokia mixed radio, and I suspect a lot of people go for popular music, who's choosing those mixes? Who's influencing that selection? Who's helping you see, listen to this, not that? And it has a little buy button at the bottom. I think Nokia played a really good one here. They're working with the record labels to give them more shop front to sell more of their product, more of their preferred product, because they would rather have somebody like Jessie J get in the charts because she's signed up and they have the full control, rather than a digital download only Eurovision Song Contest that they didn't select, that they didn't decide was going to be big. It was the people of Europe that decided.
Well, just being slightly anti-conspiracy theory at the moment.
Only if you give me a pony.
Okay, you can have a virtual pony since you're so into the digital download stuff. The actual mixes get selected by various experts in each market, but a lot of it goes on in Nokia Bristol. I mean, I agree with you. It would be interesting to know how that relationship works and whether there is any, can you push this? We're never going to find out directly. But even if there isn't that, or it's not a direct connection, what it probably is fair to say is that it encourages kind of the mainstream option, you know, in effect. Although, yes, it's great for music discovery, and I actually think Nokia do have a point when they say it gets people listening to different kinds of stuff and more music than they might otherwise do, because it's almost it's a lazy thing. People go, I'll listen to this recommended stuff that I might not otherwise have done. So on the one hand, it does kind of maybe widen up the listening pool, what gets listened to. But on the other hand, if you're not on that chosen list, you know, you're quite right. You disappear and it's harder to get heard. And it's sort of everyone having the same mainstream tastes. I mean, in all fairness to Nokia, there are, you know, a large number of mixes out there. You can create your own. But of course, Ewan will then come back and say, well, you have to be in the catalogue to begin with. And that's absolutely true. So, you know, I think I kind of buy into the conspiracy theory a little bit, but I'm not sure it's sort of quite evenly preordained as Ewan might be suggesting here.
Somebody somewhere is stroking a white cat like Roger Moore in Spice World, the movie.
Yes.
That's all I'm saying.
Of course, that's all the reference I'm that you'd choose.
Well, what would you rather I've chosen as the reference there?
Wasn't it Blofeld in the original Bond films?
No, Blofeld was never in Spice World, the movie. And even if he did, Blofeld never ran a record company.
Fair enough.
You kind of go, I know, it's just going to be completely random. He didn't want to
recognize. The thing is, I just don't recognize the depth of your cultural references. Having never actually watched Spice World, the movie, which you clearly have.
It's fantastic! Oh, right, okay, Rafe, this weekend you have to watch Spice World, the movie.
Right, okay. I will be traumatized by that this weekend.
No, it's okay. They've edited out the Gary Glitter scene. You don't see it anymore.
That's all right, good.
That's fine. Do you want to be in my gang? Right then, very briefly, Rafe, because I realized that it put the 30-second clock on you when we talked about Nokia Music Plus. Sorry, listener, that's what happens. Xbox Live, we have a title out for every single phone. Skulls of the Shogun is out here. It's also available on the Xbox Live Arcade for the home consoles and Windows 8, and it's cross-platform play. It's just a nice little sort of Titan turn-by-turn strategy war game with shoguns who have died and they've been reincarnated and get to keep on killing each other. So it's a bit like Valhalla in Japan. And it looks really nice, and this is the sort of stuff that we want to see from more from Xbox Live. But again, is Microsoft not making full use of a property they've had? There's got a bad bit of communication message coming over. Xbox Live on Windows Phone really should have been a shining crown jewel. It should have been promoted everywhere, TV adverts and so on. It just seems to be that they just never realised the potential they had in that branding.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, that. But, I mean, you presumably tried this out. Is it good on Windows Phone?
It is good on Windows Phone, yes. We'll have a review next week on Wednesday, which is when we always review the Xbox games. Excellent. And that's why we very rarely have reviews on Wednesdays anymore.
Yes, well, I know you're upset about the lack of regular releases, but hopefully things are picking back up again now.
I hope so. But if you're out there and you're a game developer listening and you're going, you know, my games would be perfect. My game would work on Xbox Live. They just haven't decided to sort of certify it. So could you have a look at it on a Wednesday anyway? Get in touch. You and I, allaboutwindowsphone.com. I'm assuming that works, Rafe. Or you can go through the site or catch me on Twitter, Facebook, same with Rafe and the rest of everybody else on the team. Rafe, very briefly, I'm not going to put a clock on this, but this is outside of your area of expertise, I believe. But we have to talk very briefly about the launch of BlackBerry and BlackBerry 10.
We do. Yes, I mean, this is mobile, so yes, I consider it within my area of expertise.
It's almost the same hardware spec as Windows Phone 8 devices, 1.5 gigahertz dual core CPU, 16 meg storage, 16 gig storage. Yeah, you need a cloud machine for that one. 2 gig of RAM, 4.3-ish inch HD pixel resolution screen, but with BlackBerry 10 OS. Now, to me, it looks like BlackBerry, they've renamed themselves from Research and Motion, which is great because RIM, I never even worked out how to capitalize the thing. They're now just BlackBerry, and the capitalizations on both Bs. They didn't do the mistakes that Windows Phone did at their launch. They had a huge number of applications. They talked about use cases, but at the same time, they made brand new mistakes. Alicia Keys, I'm the new brand ambassador. Okay, so two problems with that. One, she tweeted that from an Apple iPhone. And two, do we think that the target BlackBerry user who's 40, balding and works in an office in New York and likes his donuts even knows who Alicia Keys is?
Well, it's all perception management, but it was really interesting. I mean, I actually think BlackBerry have done a very good job here, given the limited resources. But you're right, they did make sort of some new mistakes. I think the app one has been, you know, talked about very extensively, sort of BlackBerry saying they're going to have 100,000 by the time it's out in the States, or it's 70,000 now. And you obviously compare that to Windows Phone, which was, you know, in the low thousands when it launched, and even now is only around the 150,000 mark. But an awful lot of those apps are actually converted Android titles, which when you actually try them on the device, you know, don't really fit in with the design language, often run quite slowly, you know, don't feel connected in the same way, have different experience and feel like poor quality apps. And we've said it time and time again, it's not just about numbers, it's about the quality of the apps. And, you know, I've always been a bit skeptical about these Android adaptations, which is, you know, what this effectively is. And they're on various other platforms that have been talked about quite extensively. And Aidan Davlek is often the technology behind them. So I actually think the app one is, you know, a case of people need to look at that a bit more closely before deciding, you know, that's a good thing. I think the other area, you know, they have arrived late and, you know, it's here now. That's great. But we've seen how long it's taken for Windows Phone to kind of establish itself and get going as a new ecosystem. You know, will BlackBerry have that same problem? It'd be really interesting to watch. I actually think BlackBerry has less of an issue here because of its very loyal fan base it had in place. But that kind of brings me kind of to the general thought about BlackBerry 10. I think it's going to convert its existing users very well, and I'd expect the first few quarters of sales to be very strong indeed. But I find it difficult to see how and when it's going to bring in either lapsed users of BlackBerry that have gone elsewhere, or indeed new users altogether. Of course, there'll be some of them, but you know, the thing about BlackBerry is it's, you know, a vertical player. It's trying to do everything itself. It's actually reducing some of the license fees it gets for some of the back-end software, so it actually needs to sell even more devices than it was previously. Now, at the moment, it's sort of been doing between 7 and 12 million devices a quarter in the last year or so. It does need to increase that substantially, I think, to be sustainable in the longer term, and I think that's going to be very difficult, especially when you bear in mind these first two devices are relatively expensive. The QWERTY version isn't coming out until late spring, I think it's probably fair to say. The Z10, I went to see it, looks really nice. It's a bit of an iPhone clone. The design, I would say, isn't as strong as some of the Lumia devices, but there's a lot to say nice things about it, but you'd hope that with the pricing it meets. So it'd be a really interesting one to watch. But my overriding thing is, this is going to be the battle for third place ecosystem, no doubt at all, and we're going to see loads of commentary on this. But there's kind of two things that make me maybe a little more skeptical about BlackBerry, taking away from the shiny new syndrome that you always get with a new platform and new device launch. You've always got a lot of optimism around it. And it's two things. It's kind of the depth of BlackBerry's pockets. We've seen this conversation around Nokia, for example, with its cash position. BlackBerry doesn't have vast amounts of reserves, and it doesn't have a big company like Microsoft that can sort of afford to subsidize things backing it up as well. And so it's got less room for maneuver, if you like. And as I say, the second thing I've kind of already hinted at is I don't think it solves some of the fundamental strategy and structural problems that BlackBerry has. And what I mean by that is this idea that it needs to sell a certain number of devices to be sustainable. I think it's going to find that difficult to do because it is trying to do everything on its own. It can't afford to have any missteps, and getting a perfect execution across that broad range of things, from device production, design, the software itself, the service layer and everything else, it's very hard to do as a single company. Even the very biggest companies find it difficult. Apple is perhaps one example of that, but you look at some of the stuff that they do, how they haven't done well on Maps, for example, and they don't actually do their own manufacturing either. That's all outsourced, and a lot of the Apple success is based on cooperation with third party around apps, for example. So even Apple, I would sort of hesitate to call a true vertical player. So I've said many times, I actually think the future, and I think Apple in any case is a bit of an exception, the future is companies collaborating together within an ecosystem, because it's more efficient from both an economic way, but also in terms of executing correctly. Bringing more cooks in does make things more difficult, but it also gives you added strength as well. And that's, I kind of see BlackBerry being in the same position it was, 12 months ago, maybe in another 18 months. There aren't any fundamental changes to their approach in many ways. Great new UX, I think it's really nice. The gestures are nice. I think maybe a bit of a steep learning curve, but I'm going to be watching this with a lot of interest. And I think we should maybe talk about this in another couple of months when we've kind of seen the early indications, and we can maybe do a comparison between the early days of Windows Phone, BlackBerry. I actually think BlackBerry's going to end up looking much better than Windows Phone did in the early days. But look at a year ahead or maybe 2 years ahead, and I think that position would be reversed.
I think there's two things that I want to point out here before we close off the podcast. The first one is the love for BlackBerry.
Oh, definitely.
Let's be fair, there is no love for Microsoft. Windows Phone was not given much slack. The only slack it was given was that bit just before it jumps off the bar with the rope around its neck. And everybody goes, hey, it's not dead yet. It's still falling. Cool. The amount of coverage the BlackBerry launch got was at a level of Apple. You don't get that for an Android launch. You never got that for the Lumia or any of the Windows Phone launches. There is this subset of America, I think, where BlackBerry was their first love. Then they've moved on to either Apple or Android. Now their first love has come back, and it's like the J. Giles Band song Centrifold. It's like you just open up. I remember you at school. Oh, look at you now. Hey, bulked up a bit. And they've just went, yeah, I remember when I loved it. But None of those commentators are saying that they're going to go back to BlackBerry. They're all going, I've got me Apple. I've got me Android. I'm happy where I am. But it does look nice, doesn't it? You know, it's there's no grass is always greener. It's the grass was greener. So I think BlackBerry will get an easy ride until we start getting the first market share numbers coming out. And this is the second issue that I have. BlackBerry's heyday, let's if we say BlackBerry's heyday was about 2009, 2010. Yeah,
that's probably reasonable. Yeah,
when they were kicking about 20 to 25% market share.
Certainly in some markets, yeah. I think it's 20% of fair level, yeah.
Yep. That was on the basis of shifting 35 billion units a year.
Yeah.
For 2009, if I remember rightly. It's about that part. 35 million units in 2013 is going to translate to about 2% market share.
And yes.
People are just going to go, your market share is only 2% after a year. That's rubbish. But in actual fact, that number is probably going to be the best sales figures BlackBerry's had in 5 years. That they're going to have the same amount of money coming into the company. They're going to have that to work on capital. But they need to change the story. They need to change the PR story to stop people looking at market share. I might have written this up on another site that I work for, in which case Rafe may or may not link to it. But the point here is market share is a crap way to look at smaller big players. And the same goes for Windows Phone. The same goes for things like Jolla and Firefox Mobile and Ubuntu Mobile when it comes out as well over the next 18 months. You know, people are going to look at it and go, look, you're just fighting over 1%. You know, give up, go home. But that 1% at the end of 2013 is going to be, you know, about 10 to 15 million units. Now, any well-set-up company should be able to survive on 15 million units a year. They might not have to look too high, look above their station, but there should be a viable business in there. And I think that's what BlackBerry need to get over. They are going for a specific number of handsets. They're not going for market share. They're not trying to take over the world. They're going for a loyal customer base to keep them. And just to pick up on one of your points, Rafe, I think they'll have a much harder time getting people coming back from Android and Apple. Yes. I think that once you've left BlackBerry, you've left BlackBerry.
Yeah, no.
I saw a lot of comments online that says, loved it, but I'm bought in with Android now.
I agree. I mean, we talked about switching costs before, and I think, you know, especially given the cost of the devices, what it strikes me is there's no big reason to pick up a BlackBerry as opposed to
Android
or an iOS device. I think, you know, in the enterprise space, it may be a bit different, but I actually think, you know, BlackBerry faces lots of competition from Windows Phone there in terms of all the security stuff. I mean, the balance stuff that you get on BlackBerry, this is a separation of your personal and your business stuff, is interesting, but it requires a bez server, so it's not really something you get as a consumer. And that's what it comes back to. I mean, you were saying about the 15 million device and sustainable business. The question is, what is that sustainable level? And I think at the moment, BlackBerry is aiming perhaps hard in that, or at least it wants to present that front. But it's an interesting question and it's not just BlackBerry. This is something that faces the likes of Yola and potentially other new entrants like Firefox or Ubuntu. You know, what is success? And at the moment, you know, the media tends to define that in market share terms, and the same has been true of Windows Phone. You know, BlackBerry may not disappear, but, you know, it may become more of, if you like, a boutique player. And in one sense, it's got an easier job than Windows Phone, because I think Windows Phone does need to establish itself as a big platform. It can't be a kind of just an enterprise specialist like BlackBerry could potentially be now. While BlackBerry, I think, still wants to be more and it wants to recapture the youth market, I think that's going to be incredibly difficult. Certainly not going to happen with the current devices and the expense. You know, in one sense, BlackBerry maybe has an easier ride ahead than Windows Phone. Is that fair to say?
I think short term in the press it will do, but I think Microsoft is so used to being the bad guy, it can take the punishment.
Yeah.
You know, I think BlackBerry didn't change the story. They didn't go, we're aiming for 10 million units in the year. They just said, we're aiming to be the best. If you had actually, you know, walked up and said, here's the number, we'll tell you whether we went over or under at the end of the year. I think BlackBerry need to take the story away from the market share and put it into a territory where they are comfortable, where they can win. What's the profit earning ratio on each handset? What's the average revenue per user that's going to the customers being the networks? What's the average revenue per user going to a developer? You know, if the developers turn around and realize that they're making $10 per user per year and they're only making $1 on Windows Phone, 50 cents on Apple, and 3 cents and a nickel on Android. They're going to go for BlackBerry. BlackBerry need to change the story. Windows Phone, in a sense, needs to change the story as well. So, you know, they are in the sort of same area. But at the same time, BlackBerry doesn't solve a problem anymore. BlackBerry's raising the edge. We've got push email. You know what, guys? We've all got push email. You can get push email on a $25 pay-as-you-go handset that you buy in the corners of India. It doesn't make BlackBerry special anymore. What's the USP now? We've got a little red alert light.
Well, I think it's more than that. I mean, BlackBerry offers a lot more to enterprise than that. But it's interesting, you're right, in the sense that I think, you know, the stuff that makes BlackBerry special maybe appeals to a much smaller portion of the market than it once did. And while I have no doubt it can, you know, regain a lot of strength there, expanding out of that will be very difficult. You know, the BBM expansion into the youth market was something, it's hard to see that sort of thing happening again. And so it comes back to this, you know, what is a sustainable level for BlackBerry in the long term? And I guess the big question there is, you know, if we are moving into an ecosystem world, which I think it's very much true, and it's going to be more so in the next few years, you know, is a small player on its own able to survive during the whole approach? Or, you know, would a more viable strategy maybe in the future being, you know, having the BlackBerry experience on another device, now be that Android or Windows Phone or something else? You know, that's the kind of questions that will get asked. I mean, in the short term, I think they've got no problem. You say lots of positive press, people will be paying attention. But, you know, it's the, you know, the story for BlackBerry is not really about the Z10Q. I mean, they've executed amazingly well to do this new release and have that go smoothly. But the same questions that are sort of were being asked during its decline are still there in the background, really. And for me, that's going to be the question of the next few years for them.
Indeed. We will keep a close eye on that one, if purely to see what the competition are doing, so we can steal their best ideas. Rafe, any plans for doing an all-about site about BlackBerry?
No, not at the moment. I think we've got our hands full with Windows Phone.
There we go. Right, then, speaking of hands full with Windows Phone, what's been in your hand this week that you've been playing with, Rafe?
This is good. Is it a pony? Are you wanting me to talk about apps or something else?
Talking about apps.
Okay. Say your appointment, and this is an app that allows you to do essentially a voice entry into your calendar with just a couple of taps. You start the app, you hit the microphone, and then you'll walk through a series of prompts saying, you know, you describe the title and the location of your appointment, then the time and the date, and then the duration, and enables you to enter a calendar entry very easily. Now, of course, you can use the calendar application to do this, but where this comes in to its own is where you don't have, you know, easy access to the device. Maybe you're driving in the car and you want to put in a calendar entry after getting off a call or something like that. And so I thought this was a clever use of Windows Phone 8's voice APIs, you know, using the Microsoft technology on the back end. It is only available for Windows Phone 8, but there's increasing number of these clever kind of voice control applications. There's ones that, you know, control music, but this was one of the first ones I've seen with kind of, if you like, a more enterprise bent, you know, for entering calendars into your device.
I just want one of these voice apps to recognize the phrase "open the pod bay doors, Hal." I'm sorry, Dave, I can't do that. And there we go. Right. It's a tricky one for me because there hasn't been an application that's really stood out for me this week. There's been ones that I've been playing around with. I got a lot of value out of the offline maps loading in Nokia Maps, for example. So arguably that's an application, the fact that I can download the maps, mostly because I was traveling over to Denmark to see their selection process, to see the song that they would eventually send to the Eurovision Song Contest. It was fun, though. So, you know, in a way, that's an application that I liked. And there's also like speedtest.net. I've been going visiting my sister and she's like, her Sky broadband was having a bit of issues, so I could run speedtest.net, which is a dedicated application, over her Wi-Fi, compared to the 3G signal, to give some numbers. But again, it's not something that's really stood out. Farm Frenzy 2 Pizza Place, you know, I think everybody's worked out that Farm Frenzy's got me hooked over the last couple of weeks. So this is the kind of semi-sequel that wasn't published under Xbox Live. But again, playing that. But again, it just feels like a continuation of that. This is really been a week of just using the core functionality on the phone while out and about traveling. So my application of the week is Windows Phone 8.
Okay, I think that's a slight cheat, but we'll let you have that one.
Yeah, seeing as you won't give me a pony.
No, I'm sorry about that, Ewan.
Exactly. Windows Phone 8. There we go. All about windowsphone.com. More information. No ponies. More reviews. No ponies. More discussion in chat. No ponies. And you'll find more comments and everything from myself, from Rafe, from Steve, from David, and all of the team. Rafe, any final thoughts?
Well, just goodbye, everybody. Thank you for listening to the podcast. And please tune in again next week.
Indeed. Yeah. Tune in. Tune in.
Listen in. Download. Whatever you want to say. It's an analog world that's catching up with a digital world.
Yeah, okay. Cut. We'll call that a take.